Telk. English B1. Mock Examination 2. Listening Comprehension. Part 1. You're going to hear five people. You'll hear each person only once. After you've listened to each person, decide if the statement for each of the items is true or not true. Mark your answer on the answer sheet. Now you will have half a minute to read the five statements.
Are cheap airlines, or budget airlines as they prefer to be called, really as good as they're made out to be? We asked travellers with low-cost airlines, as well as employees of the airline companies, about their experience with low-cost flying and what they think of it.
I fly regularly with budget airlines and have always found the service to be well up to scratch. The staff are friendly, have kept me informed of any delays, and I have never had any major problem. The fact that I can fly home to Northern Ireland for as little as £35 is a bonus. On the other hand, a friend had no end of grief with one airline when its online reservation system double-booked her on an international flight. It took 6 months to get a refund, and she gave up trying to get an apology.
Our bags have been lost on each of our last four trips. Once is unlucky, twice very unlucky, but four times in four trips, that's a bit much. I realise you get what you pay for, but you do expect your baggage to arrive with you. I will use them again because they are cheap and convenient, but only if I'm going somewhere where I don't need to check in luggage. Cheap airlines are great. But to me, the cost and inconvenience of not having your essential holiday items is far too high.
I am a crew member. And it should be noted that airlines are cutting or have cut the number of cabin crew on flights, sometimes down to the legal minimum. This has caused the crew to work harder to deliver what the customer expects. It's well known in the industry that the average amount of time spent with each passenger on flights under 3 hours is 5 seconds. Not really enough time. You leave them with either a good or bad impression, but you haven't got the time to worry about it.
Our plane had a cracked windscreen and was delayed for 5 hours. But the airline was fantastic. Staff kept us up to date with developments. We had drinks and food vouchers. The captain of the aircraft even came around to chat to us. Finally, they flew in another plane. Upon boarding, we were given letters of apology which had been prepared and faxed to the airport. We were also given £20 off our next flight per person and free drinks on the flight. What I thought was going to be a nightmare became one of my best experiences.
You get what you pay for. Personally, cheap airlines have changed my life. My parents were never able to visit me 4 times a year in the past. Now they can come over whenever they want and make the most of their grandchildren growing up. Objectively, cheap flights are great when there are no glitches. Not so hot when the going gets tough. But you expect this. And if you want champagne treatment, don't pay a cheap fare.
End of part one. Listening comprehension part two. You're going to hear a radio program. You will hear the program twice. After you've listened to the program, decide if the statement for each of the items is true or not true. Mark your answer on the answer sheet. Now you will have 2 minutes to read the statements.
Hello, this is Radio Australia. Good morning and welcome to Future Tech. Sitting among wild flowers on the roof of the South Bank Centre, we welcome Professor C.J. Lim, the founder of Studio 8 Architects in London. Professor Lim talks about the idea of a future smart city where agriculture and urbanisation interconnect. In fact, Smart Cities is the name of a book he co-wrote 2 years ago. In his book, he describes the urban farming concepts he and his team put together for the city of Guangming in southern China. Professor C.J. Lim, Smart City. Tell us about it.
Smart City is a vision, a provocation, a manifesto for better living in the 21st century. Intelligent living, not necessarily high-tech living, but living in a sustainable way.
And in that sense, tied in very much with that, is the idea of urban farming, isn't it? People in urban areas, because we know the world is getting much more urbanised, and that's been going on for hundreds of years, but getting them much more in touch with food, with the food that they consume.
Yeah, I mean, smart cities is very much about the symbiosis of nature and man-made built forms, about understanding where our food comes from, looking at food security, but taking these issues into an urban planning policy, looking at possibility how the design of future architecture and cities would be influenced by our food security.
Why do you think it's got to that stage? Why have we taken on that kind of view?
I think it's because farming has always been seen as secondary, and food over the years has become increasingly cheap because of mass production. And I think that's really a very scary attitude, because food production, global food production, is falling. But I think it is really vital that these questions start to be implemented or questioned or introduced in how you build your city, how we should all live in certain countries.
Global production of food might be falling, but the globalization of food, in a sense, is on the increase, isn't it? I mean, you go to a supermarket in Australia and you'll find fish from Tanzania together with the local fish and prawns from Australia or New Zealand, say. Is that the same across the world?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, for example, you take supermarkets in the UK, 90% of our food comes from outside the UK. I mean, our vegetables especially, green beans, lettuce, tomatoes, they come from sort of as far as Africa and Kenya and Morocco and so forth. And I think that is quite scary. And you in Australia apparently are one of the largest importer of salmon from Scotland. Could you imagine how ridiculous this is to import fish from right across the other side of the world? But the thing is that we could actually eat well and still be very conscious about the food miles on our table. On the other hand, you know, if we were to promote urban agriculture, a lot of these problems would not just, they wouldn't be a problem. They would actually become innovative elements within our everyday living, our planning, and our design of the future lifestyle.
Now, tell us about urban agriculture. And in the work you've done in China, you've actually established farms back inside the city centre. You've put them back in there. Just tell us about that, the process of doing that.
In China currently, new communities are only for single salary economic strata. The poor do not mix with the rich. And here, this is an opportunity where one could actually serve the other and vice versa. And I think that's really important. And in our case, the design was very much based on the layering, in a way, the vertical stacking of farming and housing. So one on top of the other one. And then you sort of have this kind of almost pyramidal thing, and the top would be a reservoir where you collect water, rainwater, and the rainwater would release right across the terracing to irrigate the farms.
You mentioned earlier a city like Los Angeles, a vast, sprawling metropolis which is well established. What's the hope of a city like that, or even a city like London? What's the hope of it actually changing its ways and being able to effectively incorporate some of these ideas of urban farming?
I think it's much more likely that this culture of urban farming, sustainable eating, sustainable cities to be established in China more than the other cities that, like Los Angeles or even London. I think the Chinese has the ambition to really be ahead of the game. They are very conscious. The middle class group of well-educated Chinese that is rapidly growing, and they're very, very conscious about green issues, environmental issues, and health issues, and nutritional issues. And that really helps. I think having an informed audience within a country really could support these, that could support these issues, would really help the government to implement a lot of these things.
Professor C.J. Lim, food for thought, pardon the pun. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you very much. I really enjoyed the conversation. Thank you.
Now listen to the radio program again.
Hello, this is Radio Australia. Good morning and welcome to Future Tech. Sitting among wild flowers on the roof of the South Bank Centre, we welcome Professor C.J. Lim, the founder of Studio 8 Architects in London. Professor Lim talks about the idea of a future smart city where agriculture and urbanisation interconnect. In fact, Smart Cities is the name of a book he co-wrote 2 years ago. In his book, he describes the urban farming concepts he and his team put together for the city of Guangming in southern China. Professor C.J. Lim, Smart City. Tell us about it.
Smart City is a vision, a provocation, a manifesto for better living in the 21st century. Intelligent living, not necessarily high-tech living, but living in a sustainable way.
And in that sense, tied in very much with that, is the idea of urban farming, isn't it? People in urban areas, because we know the world is getting much more urbanised, and that's been going on for hundreds of years, but getting them much more in touch with food, with the food that they consume.
Yeah, I mean, smart cities is very much about the symbiosis of nature and man-made built forms, about understanding where our food comes from, looking at food security, but taking these issues into an urban planning policy, looking at possibility how the design of future architecture and cities would be influenced by our food security.
Why do you think it's got to that stage? Why have we taken on that kind of view?
I think it's because farming has always been seen as secondary, and food over the years has become increasingly cheap because of mass production. And I think that's really a very scary attitude, because food production, global food production, is falling. But I think it is really vital that these questions start to be implemented or questioned or introduced in how you built your city, how we should all live in certain countries.
Global production of food might be falling, but the globalization of food, in a sense, is on the increase, isn't it? I mean, you go to a supermarket in Australia and you'll find fish from Tanzania together with the local fish and prawns from Australia or New Zealand, say. Is that the same across the world?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, for example, you take supermarkets in the UK, 90% of our food comes from outside the UK. I mean, our vegetables especially, green beans, lettuce, tomatoes, they come from sort of as far as Africa and Kenya and Morocco and so forth. And I think that is quite scary. And you in Australia apparently are one of the largest importers of salmon from Scotland. Could you imagine how ridiculous this is to import fish from right across the other side of the world? But the thing is that we could actually eat well and still be very conscious about the food miles on our table. On the other hand, you know, if we were to promote urban agriculture, a lot of these problems would not just, they wouldn't be a problem. They would actually become innovative elements within our everyday living, our planning and our design of the future lifestyle.
Now, tell us about urban agriculture. And in the work you've done in China, you've actually established farms back inside the city centre. You've put them back in there. Just tell us about that, the process of doing that.
In China currently, new communities are only for single salary economic strata. The poor do not mix with the rich. And here, this is an opportunity where one could actually serve the other and vice versa. And I think that's really important. And in our case, the design was very much based on the layering, in a way, the vertical stacking of farming and housing. So one on top of the other one. And then you sort of have this kind of almost pyramidal thing, and the top would be a reservoir where you collect water, rainwater, and the rainwater will release right across the terracing to irrigate the farms.
You mentioned earlier a city like Los Angeles, a vast, sprawling metropolis which is well established. What's the hope of a city like that, or even a city like London, What's the hope of it actually changing its ways and being able to effectively incorporate some of these ideas of urban farming?
I think it's much more likely that this culture of urban farming, sustainable eating, sustainable cities to be established in China more than the other cities that, like Los Angeles or even London. I think the Chinese has the ambition to really be ahead of the game. They are very conscious. The middle class group of well-educated Chinese that is rapidly growing, and they're very, very conscious about green issues, environmental issues, and health issues, and nutritional issues. And that really helps. I think having a informed audience within a country really could support these, that could support these issues, would really help the government to implement a lot of these things.
Professor C.J. Lim, food for thought. Pardon the pun. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you very much. I really enjoyed the conversation. Thank you.
Now you have 1 minute to check your answers again. End of part 2. Listening comprehension part 3. You're going to hear 5 short texts. You will hear each text twice. After you've listened to each text, decide if the statement for each of the items is true or not true. Mark your answer on the answer sheet.
You are at the airport waiting for flight BA732 to London. There is an announcement.
Due to severe weather conditions, flight number BA732 will be diverted to Manchester. Passengers for London are requested to contact the BA desk, where they will receive further information about onward connections to London.
Listen to the text a second time.
You are at the airport waiting for flight BA732 to London. There is an announcement.
Due to severe weather conditions, flight number BA732 will be diverted to Manchester. Passengers for London are requested to contact the BA desk, where they will receive further information about onward connections to London.
You work at the reception desk of a hotel and hear the following from a guest.
Hello, this is Arnold Harris in room 305. I seem to have misplaced my car keys. This is really frustrating. Could you see if I've left them at the reception? Or I might have dropped them on the floor near the concierge desk. If we can't locate them, I'll have to phone my wife to send me another set of keys.
Listen to the text a second time.
You work at the reception desk of a hotel and hear the following from a guest.
Hello, this is Arnold Harris in room 305. I seem to have misplaced my car keys. This is really frustrating. Could you see if I've left them at the reception? Or I might have dropped them on the floor near the concierge desk. If we can't locate them, I'll have to phone my wife to send me another set of keys.
You are listening to the British Weather Report on the radio.
And now the weather. Mist, clouds and fog will develop over the next 24 hours. Tomorrow, after a dull and damp start in most areas, it will be dry and bright. Although rain will spread southwestwards during the late evening, covering the whole of Britain during the night. BBC News at 6:03. Our next news will be at 7.
Listen to the text a second time.
You are listening to the British Weather Report on the radio.
And now the weather. Mist, clouds and fog will develop over the next 24 hours. Tomorrow, after a dull and damp start in most areas, it will be dry and bright. Although rain will spread southwestwards during the late evening, covering the whole of Britain during the night. BBC News at 6:03. Our next news will be at 7.
You are visiting a company in England and your guide is welcoming you.
Ladies and gentlemen, first of all, I'd like to welcome everybody to the company and hope that you'll have an interesting visit. The main part of the programme will be a tour of the factory to see how our products are made. Before that, however, we would like to show you a short film about the history of our firm. And after the tour, we will be offering you a small snack, when you will also have the opportunity to ask any questions that you may still have.
Listen to the text a second time.
You are visiting a company in England, and your guide is welcoming you.
Ladies and gentlemen, first of all, I'd like to welcome everybody to the company and hope that you'll have an interesting visit. The main part of the programme will be a tour of the factory to see how our products are made. Before that, however, we would like to show you a short film about the history of our firm, and after the tour, we will be offering you a small snack, when you will also have the opportunity to ask any questions that you may still have.
You are on a train in England going to London and hear the following.
Ladies and gentlemen, we regret to announce that this service is running slightly late this morning. We will not be reaching London Paddington as scheduled at 10:30 on Platform 5, but we'll be arriving approximately 20 minutes later than planned on Platform 15. We would like to apologise to passengers for this change in schedule and hope it does not cause you too much inconvenience.
Listen to the text a second time.
You are on a train in England going to London and hear the following.
Ladies and gentlemen, we regret to announce that this service is running slightly late this morning. We will not be reaching London Paddington as scheduled at 10:30 on Platform 5, but we'll be arriving approximately 20 minutes later than planned on Platform 15. We would like to apologise to passengers for this change in schedule and hope it does not cause you too much inconvenience.
That's the end of listening comprehension. Thank you for listening.